Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
You hear the uneven footsteps first. Drag, click, drag, click. That's how you know she's behind you. The heel is broken off of her left shoe as she drags it across the ground with every step, a sharp contrast to the steady click of her intact heel.
"Help me,"
she whispers, and that's when you realize the limping woman is behind you. My friend Stefan and I were having lunch at school when he kept on saying this rubbish. It was said that she was a teacher at an elementary school some decades ago, young, beautiful, and the victim of a terrible murder. She had been walking home to the house she shared with her parents one night after school when she realized she was being followed. She sped up, and so did her pursuer, until both were running down this dark country lane with only open farmland on either side. Her heel broke and her ankle snapped as she fell, and her pursuer became her murderer. It was a slow, torturous affair that left her beaten and covered in stab wounds. And when her killer was done, he just left her to bleed out beside the road. She wasn't found until the next morning, and by then, all anyone could do was search for the person responsible. While some believe that the man was caught and dealt with not long after, others think that he or she is still at large, and the limping woman, as the victim came to be known, won't rest until her killer is caught. I was always skeptical about this story, I said to Stefan when he brought up that a friend of a friend of a friend had met the limping woman during lunch at school one day. It's true. The guy was out at the old highway a couple nights ago and saw her, Stefan insisted stubbornly over our sandwiches. If he saw her, wouldn't he be dead? Also, I thought you weren't supposed to turn around. Heard her. Whatever. You know what I mean, Ryan.
Sure,
I said with a roll of my eyes. It always frustrated Stefan that I didn't share his willingness to believe the unbelievable. So how did he get away? He said the words, duh. What words? It is said that her last words were, "My mom's waiting for me at home," before the killer murdered her. So if you come across her, you have to say that without turning back, and the ghost of the limping woman will let you go.
What bullshit? You don't believe this.
Everyone believes this, because it's a true story. Before I could argue with him more on this, recess got over. We headed to our class, and as we entered, we received a surprise. Instead of our cranky history teacher, Mr. Peterson, there was standing a beautiful woman in her late 30s near the chalkboard. We all got seated, and the woman introduced herself as Miss Marianne Clare, our new substitute teacher. "Your teacher, Mr. Peterson, had to go away for a while due to some personal reasons, so I'll be covering him. Shall we start?" Boys in our class seemed to get more interested now. Miss Clare was teaching us the history of our town when Stefan asked, "Do you know about the urban legend of this town?" I expected Miss Clare to shut him up for asking such a stupid question, but she didn't do that. She paused and gazed at the entire class for a second and then said, "You mean the story of the limping woman?" All the students exchanged an awkward look, but Miss Clare didn't mind. "How many of you believe in that story?" Almost everyone raised their hands, except me. Seeing me giving a mocking smile, Miss Clare looked at me and said, "You, what's your name?"
Ryan.
"So, you don't believe in this story, Ryan?"
"Obviously not. It's just another made-up scary story. I mean, there's no proof that it happened."
"Do you know the woman upon who this legend is based used to be a teacher at this school?"
"What?"
"Yes.
I heard her name was Hannah. So you mean she does exist? All I can say is those who have tried to look for her never came back empty-handed. In fact, some of them never came back. An eerie silence echoed in the class as everyone got the chills hearing Miss Claire. On our way home, Stefan again brought up this topic of the limping woman. I told you it's true. No, it's not. Then how come Miss Claire believes in it too? Didn't she say that the woman used to be a teacher in our school? She is nuts, just like you all. Fine, let's go to the spot tonight and see if it's a story or the truth. I have heard that she only goes after people who don't believe in her. I didn't like the way that Stefan said that. I knew he was trying to spook me out, so I replied with an irritating tone. Whatever it is, no. We could go out there, out to the spot she haunts. No, don't be dumb. You don't believe it anyway, so what's the big deal? I've walked past there a lot, okay? Nothing's ever happened. Have you gone after dark? Stefan started to smile. No, but so what? Well, that's when she's active. Going in the day doesn't count. This is dumb. We'll go tonight. Every argument I had was met with questions of whether I was too afraid and Stefan mocking me for being a chicken. He kept it up for the rest of the way, and by the time I had reached my block, he had worn me down. But not because I believe she's there. I'm just going to shut you up. We'll see. The sunset was just after 5 that evening. At 7, we met up on our bikes in front of my neighborhood. We had 2 hours to ride out to the farm where the limping woman was said to haunt and get back before curfew. We paddled hard and fast, leaving behind the glow from windows and street lamps until the darkness swallowed up the world around us. With only moonlight to guide us, we wove our way across town and passed into the outskirts where the insects were louder, the stars were brighter, and you felt invisible eyes watching you from the dark. It was not hard to feel entirely exposed out on that old road, where the flat fields rolled off into the distance on either side. There was the occasional barn or farmhouse, dusty drives, but otherwise, it was just us and our bikes and the night. Up ahead, Stefan said from behind me. See the cross? That's the marker for her. We skid to a stop a few yards away from it and exchanged a glance, almost lost in the shadows. Scared? He asked, breathless with excitement. No. It was an honest enough answer. I was nervous, sure, but who wouldn't be when you're outside after dark? Remember, if you turn around, she gets you. If you try to run, she makes it worse. Just stand still. When she's close by, and say the words. Ready? Let's just get this over with. We walked up to where the cross was placed and paused. We crept along the roadside, careful to keep our eyes pointed straight ahead. Stefan kept reminding me in a trembling whisper that looking anywhere else could lead to trouble. A minute or two passed. It couldn't have been longer, despite feeling like it. And nothing seemed to happen. I almost turned to Stefan to say, I told you so, when our surroundings became dead silent. All the insects that had been singing loudly when we arrived had gone hushed. There was no distant calls from nightbirds, no breeze passing over us, nothing. Just the sound of our breathing. Behind us, the grass rustled, followed by the crunch of loose gravel underfoot, like someone was pulling themselves slowly out of the field and onto the road. Drag, click, drag, click. Every hair on my body stood up at once. From somewhere over my shoulder, a woman started to sob softly.
Help me.
Stefan and I looked at each other. It was enough to tell from our faces that we were hearing this catastrophe. But she only comes for those who don't believe in her. but I believe in her. What the hell is happening? The unmistakable sound of someone inching towards us, slowly, painfully, crying out with each step.
Please,
she begged.
I'm hurt, and he's still out there.
Being terrorized with fear, we both turned around, and what we saw made our hearts jump into our throats. Our substitute teacher, Miss Claire, was standing at some distance. There was burning anger in her wide, scary eyes. She was holding a huge knife in her hand.
You know, the people of this town told you this story a bit wrong. 20 years back from today, an innocent woman was walking home from this road when she was chased and killed by a brutal murderer. The town did nothing to find her killer and turned her sordid tragedy into a spicy, scary bedtime story. The one thing they didn't know was that it wasn't just her mother waiting for her to come home. Her 8-year-old daughter was waiting for her too. I was sent away by my grandma from this evil town, but since then, I promised myself that I'll be back to avenge her death. I may never find the actual killer, but I'm going to kill everyone in this town. You guys are lucky that I'm going to start with you two. She then started to come at us full speed, and we were too shocked to move or even run for our lives. When she was too close, Stefan let out a scream, and we started to run. I'll make you all suffer exactly the way my mother was forced to. I'll bring justice to her soul. Stop, you little piglets. Stop right there. We were screaming and running, but there was no one out here to hear us cry, just like there was no one to help that poor woman that night. Miss Claire jumped on Stefan, stabbing him in the back, and they fell on the ground, losing balance. To save my friend, I grabbed a rock from the ground, and while Miss Claire was busy tackling Stefan, I slammed the rock on her head. I kept hitting her until she let go of my friend. When she fainted with the pain in her bleeding head, I managed to call for help. The people from the farmhouse nearby called the cops, and Stefan was taken to the hospital. Miss Claire was also sent to the local hospital, where she went into a coma from her injury. The town now knows the dark side of this once entitled urban legend, but I still fear what will happen if Miss Claire ever escapes after waking up.
We've been moved into our new house for about a month now, and everyone seems to be adjusting to the new lifestyle that we now have. My wife has found a new job, which she enjoys, making several new friends there. My son, Noah, has also settled in well at his new school. His teacher, Mrs. Cavill, was a younger woman, around 30, who Noah seemed to really like. He would always come home and tell my wife and me all about the fun he had at school and the fun lessons that Mrs. Cavill would teach. I had only met her once when I dropped Noah off at school on the first day, and as far as I could tell, she was a very nice lady. Every night, Noah would come home with a different homework that he would have to complete before school the next day. I'm not a massive fan of homework, but it seemed like Mrs. Cavill always set simple tasks that could easily be completed in a night. One night for homework, Noah had to ask a parent what they did for work and ask 3 questions about their job. And another night, he had to research their favorite animal and find out 3 interesting facts about them. It was always simple tasks like that, or it was simple worksheets that Noah could complete in half an hour or so. Every night, I would ask Noah what his homework was for the night, and then I would help him if he needed help. That's when I noticed the task becoming a little bit strange. One night, in Noah's 3rd week of being in the new class, he came home looking upset. When he entered the kitchen, I asked him what was wrong, and he told me that everything was okay. I then asked him what the homework was for the night, and he said that he didn't have any. This was surprising, because he always had some sort of homework task every single night. He had been in Miss Cavill's class, so it was strange that suddenly he didn't. Noah left the kitchen and went into his room, shutting the door behind him. He didn't usually close the door, but I thought he must have wanted some privacy. I could tell, though, that something was wrong, but he didn't want to say to me. Noah spent most of the night in his room, apart from dinner, when my wife and I told him he had to sit at the dinner table with us. He seemed to be in a better mood during dinner and was pretty talkative and making jokes like he usually did. After dinner, though, he went back to his room and closed the door. We decided to let him stay in there a while, but after an hour or two, I went to see and tell him that it was time for bed. I walked down to his room, opened the door, and when I looked inside, I saw that he had already fallen asleep over his workbook. I quietly walk over to him to gently wake him up and move him to his bed, but that's when I saw the homework task that was set for the night. The title that was written in Noah's workbook was, "Would I miss my parents if I no longer lived with them?" At first, I was taken aback. This was a bizarre task to set for a group of 9 and 10-year-olds. I didn't know how to react to this. I continued to read, though, to see what else he had written. He had written, "I would miss both Mom and Dad very much. I love them both a lot, and they help me with everything. I love spending dinner time with them, but I would probably love someone else as much as them if I had to. Like you were saying today, Mrs. Cavill." When I read the final sentence, I felt chills down my spine. I would probably love someone else as much as them if I had to? The words struck me like a brick to the face. What had Mrs. Cavill been telling my son? What was the purpose of telling him these things? I decided, probably stupidly, not to tell my wife what I had found. She would worry, and she probably had a right to worry, but I didn't want to concern her. I decided to confront Mrs. Cavill tomorrow and ask her about the strange homework task. The next day, I took Noah to school like I usually did, except I walked with him to class this time. I saw Mrs. Cavill alone in the classroom. She greeted me with a smile as I entered the classroom. "Hey, how are you?" she said as I entered the classroom. "How is Noah settling in?" I answered that he was settling in well, but I did have one or two concerns. She asked what they were, and so I explained. "I was just curious about the homework that you set yesterday. The one about how much they would miss their parents. I'm just concerned because it's a very strange and confronting thing to ask a group of third graders. I also noticed that Noah wrote that he might have to love someone else if he had to, like you told him. I would really like you to explain that." I told her quite bluntly. "Oh, that," she replied as she let out a slight laugh. "Yesterday I was teaching about how parents love and protect their kids, but also how that there are also other people that would be there to help them if they needed it." I wasn't satisfied with this answer and was about to question her further when suddenly a large group of children entered the classroom. They were all walking in two rows. They all greeted Mrs. Cavill one by one. They seemed very well behaved, almost too well behaved. I then saw Noah take a seat next to one of the students, who was staring at the front of the classroom with their arms crossed. Suddenly, Noah's behavior changed. He sat up a bit straighter, and his eyes widened as he began staring like the rest of the class. I looked around and noticed that all the students were staring at the same spot. All their eyes were pointed at Mrs. Cavill. Something didn't feel right. But I blew it off as this is probably some sort of morning routine they had. I left, still with concerns about the homework, but I decided to wait and see if any other strange homework would be set before taking the matter further. I decided that I would pick Noah up from school though, so I left work a little bit early and drove over to the school. The school bell rang and soon all the students were dismissed and started to come out of the school gate.
Most of the kids came running and screaming out of the gate, apart from Mrs. Cavill's class. They all walked out in a line, walking in time. This disturbed me. I had never seen a group of students so well behaved, especially even after the school bell had rung. Noah walked over to the car and hopped in. He didn't say anything and sat in his seat, staring straight forward. I asked him if he was okay, and he just replied with the word yes. I drove him home in silence, and when we got home and inside, Noah went straight into his room and closed the door. I knew something was definitely wrong, but I didn't know what. I decided to leave him alone until my wife got home, and I would tell her everything that had been going on. She got home about half an hour later, and I sat her down and explained everything. She sat and listened, and started to look more and more worried with every word I said. "Maybe I should go talk to him. He might like that," she said once I had finished explaining everything. I agreed, so she went into his room, and I waited out in the living room for them to finish talking to each other. 15 minutes later, Noah walked out of his room and into the living room. He was holding a small workbook, and he said, "Can you help me with my homework, Dad?"
Of course. Come, show me what you need help with," I replied.
He held out the notebook, and I took it out of his hands and read the homework task for tonight. Written on the top line of the page was one task: research the best way to inject your parents with anesthetic. I was barely finished reading the first sentence when I felt the sharp pain in my neck, and I looked down and saw the needle sticking out the side of my neck. Noah was holding the other end of the needle, a blank stare on his face. Everything started to go black, and the last thing I remember was seeing Noah staring down at me as I laid on the floor. I don't know how long I was out, but I was awoken by my wife screaming and crying. I woke up startled, and she continued to scream. "He's gone! Noah's gone!" she kept screaming. I looked up at her, and the first thing I saw was the small pinprick on the side of her neck. She had been injected too. I didn't know what to do, but I knew I had to find my son. I tried my best to get up, but I think the drug hadn't properly worn off yet, because I still couldn't move properly. I could move my arms, so I managed to get my phone out of my pocket and dial the police. I explained to them what happened, and they said that they would send officers out and they would begin to look for Noah. I then noticed that it was already 9 in the morning, so I decided to ring the school and see if Noah had gone there. I dialed, and a lady answered the phone. I asked if she had seen Noah from Mrs. Cavill's class. "No, I'm very sorry, but we haven't seen him today. In fact, we haven't seen anyone from Mrs. Cavill's class today. They're all absent." Which is very odd because Mrs. Cavill hasn't shown up for work either today," the lady on the phone said. I hung up and sat in silence for a moment. My wife had heard what the lady said, so she also just sat there in total silence. That was all 3 weeks ago, and Noah is still missing, along with Mrs. Cavill and the rest of his classmates. All the parents of the kids in Noah's class have the same story. They were injected with something by their own children, and when they woke up, their child was gone. No one knows where they went, but we all had the same questions. Were they all together? Was Mrs. Cavill with them? Was this all planned? Why were all the students acting so strange in the day leading up to this? Were they hypnotized or drugged? Or maybe something even more sinister was happening.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two-fourths of the British podcast No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.